And if you're just joining us, this is Weekends on All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Guy Raz, and we're going to talk about music, movies, and culture now, and in particular, about something known as the 40-year rule. Adam Gopnik is with us now from New York. He's written about it for the latest issue of The New Yorker. Hello, Adam.
Hey, Guy. How are you?
I'm good. Let's explain this with a pop quiz, Adam. You know the answer, so don't give it away. This is for the listeners.
All right.
Everyone out there who's listening, take a guess at which of the following songs won the Grammy for the best rock and roll recording in 1966. Here we go.
Take the last train to Clarksville and I'll meet you at the station. You can be here by 4:30 because I've made your reservation. Don't be scared.
Okay, it was the Monkees with Last Train to Clarksville. That was the nominee. Here's another option.
I look at all the lovely people.
Okay, we all know that one, the Beatles, Eleanor Rigby. And here's the other option for 1966 Grammy for Best Rock and Roll Song. I love that song, Adam.
First record I ever bought.
Unbelievable. The Beach Boys, of course. So we got the Beach Boys, the Beatles, the Monkees. All of these were nominees in 1966 for Best Rock and Roll Recording. Adam Gopnik, you have the answer. Who won the Grammy for Best Rock and Roll Recording in 1966?
Winning record, and we could throw Painted Black in there and a few others,
oh, yeah,
was Winchester Cathedral. Winchester Cathedral by the New Vaudeville Band.
Winchester
there it is.
Cathedral, you're bringing me down.
And they weren't even a band, really. You know, they were one of those studio inventions that had to be thrown together to do that number.
How is that possible? I mean, Eleanor Rigby, Good Vibrations. How does Winchester Cathedral win the Grammy for Best Rock and Roll Song?
This is the golden demonstration of the 40-year rule at work. It's the middle 60s, right? The most revolutionary decade. And yet, there's this lingering residual nostalgia for something that had happened 40 years before, for this music of the mid-20s. It's the period we look back at as somehow innocent, as a kind of Edenic moment before the fall. That almost always seems to be 40 years back.
Why is it 40 years?
Well, I have a theory about that.
Okay.
And my theory is, it's not so much that pop culture is made by 40-somethings. In fact, it's usually made by young folks like the Beatles, made by 20-somethings. But it's usually produced in every sense. The suits who organize it, decide what goes on, are usually 40-somethings. They're people between the age of 40 and 50. And we are fascinated, I say as one of them, we are fascinated by that moment just before you were born. It's kind of this, in every imaginable sense, the sexiest moment in the history of the universe is the moment just as your parents were making you.
Adam, you write about this in the latest issue of The New Yorker. You're looking at all these sort of cultural signposts throughout the last, 20, 30 years. Let's talk about one of them that a lot of us are focused on now, Mad Men, right? This huge cultural phenomenon, not just a TV show, but like Banana Republic ads.
Exactly.
This is a show that takes place 40 years ago.
It's interesting, too, that Matt Weiner, who's the creator and the maker of it, was born exactly in 1965. So he is just in that exactly that kind of space, that sweet spot, where it's not just that we're interested in the early 60s, it's that we load it with the feeling that then life had a kind of freshness that it doesn't have anymore. They were able to smoke innocently.
Don't you love the chase? It's like having that first cigarette. Head gets all dizzy, your heart pounds, knees go weak. Remember that?
Because they didn't know it would kill them. They were able to drink innocently at 3 in the afternoon.
I bet daily friendship with that bottle attracts more people to advertising than any salary you could dream of.
Don't you think that's part of what draws people to watching Mad Men? They say, oh my God, it's 11 in the morning, and they're going to drink. They're having rye and whiskey and scotch, and they're going to light up a cigarette. And we know it's wrong, and yet we wish we could.
And there's been a lot of talk about the Titanic this year. Of course, it's the 100th anniversary. You trace the nostalgia a lot further back.
How many people are there on board? 2,200 or more. And room in the boats for...
Adam, do you recognize that?
How many?
I do indeed. A Night to Remember.
1,200.
This is the epic drama of the greatest disaster in the history of the sea.
First of the great films about the Titanic, which comes to us right on time in the mid-50s.
40 years after.
40 years after the original. And again, you know, it's partly because, though that's a terrific movie, it's also because that's the kind of space of time you need in order for something to, in a certain sense, be drained of its terror. It becomes spectacle.
No writer of thrillers could ever achieve such agonizing suspense.
You mentioned the 60s, of course, but back to the Beatles for a moment. You say each of the last four Beatles records, which all came out in at the end of the 60s, each of them contained or included a song that harkened back to the sound of the 20s, right?
That's right.
Okay,
for Let It Be,
that's an exception. We'll forget about the exceptions.
Right.
Let's hear one of those songs, When I'm 64.
When I get older, losing my head, many years from now, will you still be sending me a Valentine? Birthday greetings, bottle of wine.
Now that sounds a little more like Winchester Cathedral.
It does. It's in the same spirit. In fact, Paul McCartney sped up his vocal to make it sound a little more 20s-ish, a little more megaphony. Like everything the Beatles touched, it's magic, it's melody, it's wonderful of its kind. But it's also a genuine looking back, as in the entire Sgt. Pepper record is in a way. But it's, again, the 40-year thing. And the funny part about it is I talked about how producers in the broad sense help create this effect. The Beatles' special producer, the great George Martin, was born in 1926, so right exactly on time. And I genuinely think one of the things that's going on in those wonderful Beatle retrospective numbers is that Paul McCartney and George Martin are playing a kind of game. You know, can you write the music of my childhood the way I'm producing the music of your youth?
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
In the 80s, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Empire of the Sun, Hope and Glory, all set in the...
In the 40s. Hope and Glory is a nice example. Wonderful film, but it's all about an innocent view of World War II, the one subject in which you'd think it would not be possible to have an innocent view. But John Borman, the director, draws exactly from his own childhood memories of being a kid in the Blitz and thinking that it was kind of cool, that it was something wonderful about the transformation of the world then.
You write about the 90s, particularly that Gap ad. I remember that Gap ad, the Brian Setzer Orchestra.
Yes.
With the song Jump, Jive, and Wail. And you had like all of these kids in khakis dancing around, jumping around.
Come inside, let me teach you how to jive and wail.
Tagline said, khakis swing.
Khakis swing, or Kerouac wore khakis, so that Jack Kerouac, 40 years later, which at the time seemed to be a document of American disaffection, suddenly became a document of American delight. We're always looking for a period that we can imagine as being somehow simpler than our own. But at a deeper level, you know what I think? It's that our kids right now, sitting in their strollers and in their cribs, they're seeing details that we're so used to that we don't even notice them. You know, we drink our lattes every morning at 10 a.m., and we're no longer aware that there's something weird about that, any more than the advertising men in 1962 were aware that there was something weird about drinking whiskey at 11 in the morning. And our kids will be storing that stuff up. And 40 years from now, they'll make art out of it, and we'll finally see what our lives were really like.
It's Adam Gopnik. He writes about the 40-year rule in the latest issue of The New Yorker. Adam, thanks.
Pleasure.
By the way, Adam, one last question for you.
Sure.
Well, whatever happened to Winchester Cathedral?
Winchester Cathedral sort of rose and fell. It was one of those great one-off songs of the 60s, you know, like Question Mark and the Mysterians and so on. And they disappeared. The one-hit wonders, but this one, 40 years old.
Winchester Cathedral, you're bringing me down. You stood and you watched out. My baby left town.
And for Saturday, that's Weekends and All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Guy Raz. Check out our weekly podcast, Weekends on All Things Considered. You can find it at iTunes or npr.org/weekendATC. We're back with a whole new hour of radio tomorrow. Until then, thanks for listening, and have a great night.